Johnson.
Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay.
Baseball season's underway. And you're ready for a brand new day.
Congratulations, Cubs.
Chicago, what do you say?
Congratulations, Chicago.
The Cubs are gonna win today.
The song is getting really annoying. Catchy though, really catchy. So this is from the Chicago's victory parade. This is when everyone's giving the announcements. But seriously, Chicago, congratulations. I'll turn this down. Anyway, welcome to Sportsaholics episode number 119. I've decided this is the heater from Van Meter. Say that two times, three times. The heater from Van Meter. The Bob Feller episode of Sportsaholics, just to kind of give that to Cleveland, legendary Cleveland Indians pitcher, great guy. I'm halfway through his book right now, now pitching Bob Feller. I mean, the guy pulled his car over on the side of the road and signed up for the Army just when he found out we were going to war. It was like, he's just like an All-American, was in the big leagues by the age of 17, went up against the Gas House Gang, you know, Dizzy Dean and his brother and St. Louis, just a great legendary baseball player. If you don't know anything about Bob Feller, look him up. Kind of a dick. He kind of had that Ted Williams type thing going, like in his retirement. But all right, for the last time, guys, this is it. The song will not be played again for at least 9 months on the show. That's a promise to you guys. Let's finish it out right here. And keep in mind, this is the live performance at the victory parade.
What do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today.
One more time. Go Cubs, go. What do you say?
It is catchy. I'll give you guys that. It's, and it's got the WGN shout out. Just congratulations again. It feels good, and I like, you know, seeing the Kansas City guy, the Ben Zobrist, kind of get the world the MVP there. You know what? And I gotta shut this fan off. It's driving me nuts. Hold on 1 second. I mean, let me play. Let me just run. I'm gonna run this back by. Just there you go, and everyone enjoy that. All right, and I'm back. Sorry, that was driving me nuts having the fan on in the back. Look, it's amazing. You know, John Huck, congratulations. Andrew Santino, congratulations. Toby up at the Comedy Store, congratulations. Brady Matthews, congratulations. These are all comedians that are really funny that have either been on the show in the past or actually, yeah, they've all been on the show in the past over the years. And I know they're all going nuts. They all have different kind of stories. I think Brady was in L.A. celebrating, it looked like. Andrew Santino had a great story where he was filming all day, hopped an early flight to Chicago that was delayed. And this was, I believe, for game 3 of the World Series, whichever one they lost. And so he rushed to the stadium, ended up getting there on time, was able to attend the game with his dad, which is a great story. I'd probably have him on in the weeks to come to hear all about that. And then my other buddy, Toby, at the Comedy Store, he flew back to Chicago just to be there, just to watch a couple of the games and just, you know, be around Cubs fans. And a great story about going to this White Sox bar that he used to get crap all the time because it would be all White Sox. Every TV, he said, like, all 10 TVs, White Sox, one in the corner, Cubs. And he'd come in and be like, how about put on the Cubs game? And they'd be like, in the corner, guy, get out of here, scram. And he said that's where they watched the games at. And after they'd won, he goes up to the guy. Well, he said they almost got in a fight years ago where he knocked his hat off. And so he goes up to him. He's like, hey, you going to knock my hat off now, tough guy? And he said he just, like, gave him a big hug and was actually really excited. And so That's good. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand. I mean, I guess like any city, you know, Mets, Yankees, you know, Giants, Oakland, kind of. A's, Dodgers, kind of. But there's that inner city rivalry, but on a global scale. It's like, you guys are the same city. So, I mean, exist, get along somewhat, you know, coexist. There's plenty of room there. So that was good to see the White Sox fans, you know, giving it up for the Cubs fans. But it was an interesting World Series. It was a legendary World Series. I mean, that Game 7 was probably the best game I've ever seen on television. I mean, I'm still going to go with that 2014 wild card game with the Royals. That also did involve John Lester getting shelled in late innings. The Royals come back and then end up winning in the 12th inning. That game was incredible to witness in person. But, man, you know, 2011 with the Cardinals, that World Series was, you know, they're one strike away from losing. David Freese goes yard, sends it to Game 7. They end up winning. That's a great World Series. But there was just something about the baseball just captivating the entire country. And you guys saw it on your Facebook feeds and your Twitter and your Instagram. And it's great for baseball. And I've never when has the NBA done that? Think right now. I mean, if you're listening in Oklahoma City, you'd be like, okay, yeah, the Thunder are huge now. They are, sure. You know, but like even in Boston, yeah, you guys get behind the Celtics. But on a national level, like when has so many people actually cared about a sport more than what I saw? You rarely see it. I mean, you see it in the Super Bowl, but it's more like, hey, we're having a party. Here's pictures of the nachos, that kind of thing. But everyone was like all in on this World Series, talking about it. You couldn't go anywhere without having a World Series discussion. And it's great. And being a nostalgic person and watching Ken Burns baseball every year, you know, they have those stories like, oh, we were all sitting around the soda shop and talking about the Mickey Mantle game or talking about what the Babe did the night before. And it reeks of baseball history, just everything, everyone being so committed, watching every game. And I love it because the Cubs, they took a slice out of the Yankee pie, if you will, the slice out of the Red Sox pie. You don't have to, you know, it was so bad 10 years ago when you would walk around. Well, okay, really 15 years ago, it was at its peak, right when the Yankees, you know, they win the three in a row. They've got like five championships in however many years. And Yankees hats everywhere. So finally the Red Sox get it done in 04. That kind of cuts into that Yankee market a little bit. But there was a picture that I have posted up on my social media. I think it's from 2010, 2011. And I'm in Kansas City in a sporting goods store trying to buy Royal shit. Like just trying to buy anything Royals. At this point, I think it was like Hosmer's rookie year. So your options are really like Alex Gordon, maybe some Hosmer stuff. And then if they've got some old Zach Greinke stuff on sale, because he'd only been gone for like a year and a half at that point. And then you turn around, two shelves full of Pedroia, of Yankee stuff, Tanaka, Jeter, Riviera, just like all that stuff. And there was it doubled, tripled the amount of Royal stuff. But that's how big their cut of the baseball pie is. So now just adding Chicago into that, and I really feel everyone is bonded to the Cubs slightly. I mean, even if you're in a big league city, you know, you're drawn to them only because it's background music. And what I mean by that is growing up, and my buddies always had WGN. And I say my buddies because my parents, they were smart. We never had cable. We just had like the six channels. And for anyone right now that's 25 or under, it's just mind blown right now. Imagine only having 5 to 6 channels of entertainment outlet for your entire youth, the entire thing. And so it was actually a very smart ploy for my parents, because I think the way they saw it is if we had cable, that meant more kids were going to be over all the time, you know, watching TV and that sort of thing. So we always had to go, you know, if I was getting cable perks, I was definitely not at the Sheezer household. I was definitely over at a friend's house. But they were always on. And in the mid-90s, you get Will Ferrell on Saturday Night Live. He starts in with the Harry Carey. So now you've got a whole national you know, spotlight on Harry Carey, this legendary Cubs announcer. And so then all of a sudden people are starting to understand like, oh, okay, wow, they've got this thing going, and they haven't won in forever. Their fans seem pretty cool. They like this beer Old Style. you know? And so now, that those three teams are on the West Coast, it's, you know, other than that, maybe White Sox. You see White Sox stuff a lot elsewhere. Maybe Giants. You do see a lot of Giants stuff. I mean, I'm in bias because I'm in California, but even in Dodger country, you do see Giants fans are kind of like Steelers fans. You could be in the middle of the sticks, in the middle of nowhere, and then some dude will roll up and he's just covered in San Francisco Giants stuff. And you're just like, why are you getting gas right now? We're in the middle of Utah. Why is there a Giants fan here right now? But God, I still haven't soaked in the World Series. And what I really liked is with the rain delay and everything, it just seemed like Ewan Coffin, the founder of the Kansas City Royals, an amazing man, put thousands of financially underprivileged children through college over the years with his Kauffman Foundation, sold the Royals. I think it was for like $76 million, which was a lot of money in 1993, I guess. It seemed like he was almost like he didn't want to give up the ring. It's like 300, you know, it's got the leap year and then it keeps going and going. It's like, I think the Royals were World Series champions for like 300 and like at least 67, 68 days. So that, you know, that was kind of cool. But it's, you know, passing the World Series baton on to some good friends that are Cubs fans, I have no problem doing. They're classy people. As you can pick up right now, these are some of the speeches I'm going to drop on you from the victory parade. I haven't heard numbers. I'm guessing 2-3 million. Looked like a great time. They had the river dyed blue. It was just a beautiful scene. But hold on, let me get this going.
To the north side.
Here we go. So yeah, this is from some of the victory speeches after the parade in Chicago.
These guys met every one of them. We all year long battled together.
I believe this is, I think this is Zobrist, Ben Zobrist right here.
Until we were down 3-1 in the World Series. It was silent in that clubhouse, let me tell you. And then the man, the myth, the legend, David Ross spoke up. He said, no, don't do that. Don't hang your heads. He said, we're the best team. He said, we've come back. We've won three games in a row a lot this year, and we're going to do it. He said, one pitch, one inning at a time. And then, the next day, the Italian stallion, our own Italian stallion, Anthony Rizzo, the heart and soul of this club, played Rocky movies all day long in the clubhouse. Rocky quotes. And now I'm a small town Illinois kid, grew up downstate, but I used to watch Rocky movies to be inspired before my games when I was a kid. So you better believe when he started that stuff up, I was all about it. And I was pumped up. And sure enough, I tell you what, this team answered the bell. Games 5, 6, and 7, it was like a heavyweight fight. And this ball club pulled through for all of you. Thank you so much, Chicago, for this opportunity. Thank you so much. This is your team. Thank you.
But he's a team leader. We have seen him become a superstar right before our eyes. Big welcome. He's going to speak, Anthony Rizzo.
First of all, real quick here. This team is so young. It is frightening. I mean, it makes me so happy to think that the Cardinals are going to have to scrap for every win against these guys for the next 10 years and then just battle for wild card spots. And, you know, that just goes back. That's my roots. I'm sorry. And, you know, those of you listening in Baltimore or Arizona don't care. But you got to understand, they chirp. They're Cardinals. Cardinals chirp really loud. And that's just in their blood. And they throw this 11-11 around. We got 11 rings. Well, in all, it could be very well possible that the Cubs win 12 out of the next 30 World Series. I'd be fine with that. I mean, we got here. Okay. Sorry about that. That blew it up. So actually, we're going to take a pause real quick. We got Peter Kalman here. This is a guest, special guest. I'm going to answer this phone. See what we got. Peter, can you hear me?
Can you hear me well?
Oh, yeah. Hold on. I'm sorry, listeners. I just blew out our listeners' speakers. I'll turn that down in post just so it didn't ruin your guys'... all right. Nice. Okay. So we got Mr. Peter Kalman here. Where are you at right now? Are you anywhere? Are you in America?
I'm in Charleston, South Carolina, actually. Just left the airport. I'm down here for a wedding.
Oh, okay, nice. So not on business. Now, and for months, you know, following you on Twitter and Facebook, you travel all over, not only North America, but all over the world. And
yeah.
I might pronounce this incorrectly. Is it the Mises Institute in Auburn? Is that, I pronounce that correctly?
You nailed it, dude. Yeah, you're one of the first people to ever say it properly. Yeah, it's the Mises Institute.
Not Mises. Not Mises.
No, everyone says that. Oh, hold on, there's a little feedback from the taxi.
No worries, no
Sorry
worries.
About that.
No, no.
Everyone says Mises. It's Mises, yeah. Named after Ludwig von Mises, who was an economist who came over from Austria to the United States during World War II. You know, a Jewish guy who basically saw the writings on the wall before World War II started and got out.
Okay, okay. And so...
And I volunteer for the Mises Institute, and I, you know, I basically am an ambassador for them to the world to kind of tell people about what they do down there, which is Austrian economics and political science and basically anti-war, you know, anti-war education, teaching people about the ills of the state and how the government uses force and violence to control people while pretending to be a legitimate, you know, source of authority in the world.
See, okay, now, okay, listeners, now don't get scared right now because this is a sports show.
What was that?
I'm talking to the listeners right now. Don't get scared because I know this is a sports show, but I've known Peter for a long time. And he's always thought outside of the box. And I wanted to have him come on right before the election just so you could get another perspective on things. Peter, it's you've dedicated yourself to just kind of really rifling through a lot of what's in the news and really digging deep and trying to find, you know, legitimate, real answers and ideally solutions to some of these global problems. And, you know, that's why I wanted to have you on. It's just you've got a really interesting take, and really we might talk about sports for a minute or two, and I appreciate you taking time out. I mean, obviously you're busy.
Well, I appreciate those words, man. You know, we do go way back. I don't even know. I mean, I guess it's been about 8 years probably.
Yeah, yeah.
We used to hang out all the time. But yeah, man, and, you know, I'm happy to do it. I'm actually, you know, I'm not the biggest sports guy in the world. I actually have a funny story about that. It's come into this conversation in a little bit, but yeah, the election this year I think is really important because it's actually great because it's galvanizing a lot of people to look at the situation that we're in and wonder kind of like, how did we end up with this as our option? You know, how did we end up like this? And you know, I would argue that, you know, that's kind of the nature of the beast, and that's kind of what you get when you put your faith in a group of people that have no relation to you and don't, quite frankly, don't care about what you want, you know? So.
Right, and pretty much just agree, like, yeah, yeah, we're doing that, and then, you know, it seems like, and I'm not a political person, but it just seems like they turn around and time,
you know,
and time,
John,
again.
I can barely hear you right now. Can you? I don't know if there's a way to make it a little louder on your speaker.
Absolutely. Is that any better?
Yeah, it's a little better.
Okay, sorry about that. I'll try to figure out what's going on here exactly.
No worries.
But yeah, it just seems like it's just... Even with the two party, you know, in the Bernie Sanders case, the cards are, they're not only stacked against you, it's like you actually come to find out you don't even really actually have playing cards in the game in the first place because, you know, the way that percentages of electoral votes get counted out, and then they have the super, what was it?
There's been a lot of stuff coming out about that this election cycle. I mean, but you can go back to 2000 when, you know, George Bush won the election without winning the popular vote. I mean, and that was kind of the first time I was like, whoa, what? And then actually the first time I was actually allowed to vote was when I was a freshman at UCLA where we met in 2004. And you know, I just voted against Bush because I was against war. So it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, that's actually, that's what got me started down this path, was the realization early on, and I didn't really put the pieces together till later. I think a lot of people don't, is that, you know, because they don't Wikipedia it or they don't look it up the process, but we really never have a say. Even when you break it down to the state and local levels, at most you're voting for four or five people, right? A couple state senators, a couple congressmen, a couple senators, and the president. Well, that's five or six positions out of 3.5 million federal employees, you know, and more than that when you break it down to the local and municipal level government. So, we're getting away from that. The main thing to focus on, right, is the current choice. Right? You have Hillary and Trump are the two people being represented in the media, the mass media. The alternative media, you know, you'll hear about other people. I think we can kind of gloss over how terrible both Trump and Clinton are. You know, Trump, there's few words I can use to describe.
Now, are you actually in danger talking, being in South Carolina? Are you going to be threatening your life?
No, I ran it by my taxi driver. She said, as long as I use good, you know, clean language, I'll I won't offend her.
All right, good,
and,
good.
I don't even need to really go too deep into talking down on these candidates.
That's not why I brought you on either. I mean, everyone knows each candidate. I just wanted to have you on just to talk about, like, so what, like, when you go to register for vote, what box are you checking?
Oh, well, I won't. I don't vote as a pragmatic and a philosophical stance. I believe that voting is forcing your will onto other people. You know, it is saying my ideas are better than yours. So no matter what you think, if my group is bigger than yours and the group of people that agrees with me is bigger than the group of people that agrees with you, we get to force you to do what we want.
So it's just, it's like a large pissing competition / popularity.
It's mob rule. Democracy is absolutely mob rule. There's no question about that. But it's funny because, I just passed the billboard that was making fun of both of them. That's hilarious. God, okay, I guess I'm in a good place right now.
That's awesome.
But it's also like, it's a sane choice, you know, because at the end of the day, there's third party candidates. Well, that in and of itself is a lie, right? There's third, there's fourth, there's fifth, there's the Green Party, there's the Libertarian Party, there's whatever, the Red Communist Party, I don't know, whatever else there is. I mean, but you have Hillary, who's a warmonger. You have Hillary Clinton, who's now also being implicated in child sex trafficking scandals and has relations to these people that are convicted sex traffickers. And you have Donald Trump, who's just an abhorrent human being. And these are the two best options. These are the two that people have to choose of the lesser of two evils from. You know, and just that sentence alone tells you they're both evil. You just have to choose the one that's less evil. And you know, I'm not one to choose evil, and that's why I kind of say I'm not going to vote. And you know, a lot of my friends, I was a libertarian for a while. A lot of my libertarian friends said, "Well, why don't you vote for Gary Johnson and you know change the system?" Well, the actual problem I come to realize years and years and years of studying this stuff is it's the system that's the problem. You can't fix a system with the system that you're trying to fix.
So what's the solution on a long-term scale versus in the meantime, like what can someone do tomorrow to quote fix the system or start fixing the system?
On Tuesday specifically they cannot show up to vote. Ultimately, I believe, and this is a contested argument even within the quote-unquote anarchist community, which is sort of an oxymoron because we believe in individuality and individuals making choices, not groups. Within my friends' groups, even they say, "Oh, well, that's you should vote. It's defensive to vote." Well, you know, I actually think voting is giving credit and giving credence to the system. It's giving it's offering legitimacy to the system and saying, you know, I'll participate in this, and then I'll have to live with the consequences. Actually, you're a comedian. George Carlin does an amazing bit about how, if you don't vote, you can't complain. That's actually backwards. If you do vote, you have no right to complain because you're the one giving you're giving your authority to these people. You're saying whatever these people, whoever wins this gets to do whatever they want. And, and then when you get back into the whole thing we talked about a little earlier about electoral colleges and how no choice is actually being made by the public, it becomes even more ridiculous,
Well,
but there's some other candidates.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to disagree with you slightly on that because, I mean, I think at some level, just for just to have, I mean, with the mass numbers of people, you have to have some sort of, Someone has to be the leader, or you know, or chooses what money is allocated where.
Would you say that 350 million people should have one leader?
No, but that's the problem. You can't really. In all reality, the United States is really about 8 different countries. It's just a unified. It's what the EU hopes to be someday.
Okay.
Really,
well, or 50 states, right?
But yeah, but really,
regional cultural regions.
Yeah,
cultural regions.
It's 50 states, but really, it's 8. Really, it's 8 big states. And
yeah, you got the Deep South. You got like the Dixie Midground. You got the Northeast. You got the Midwest. You got Texas.
Yep.
You got California.
Yeah,
you got the rest of that Northwest.
And you know, you got the Ammon Bundys up there in the Rockies and Idaho. Yeah. You know, and all those kind of you know.
Did you see they just got acquitted and they just got exonerated of all
the
charges?
Yeah, I think. Look, if
interesting.
Well, I think a big part of that, Peter, is that if they didn't get in that gunfight and gun down. Granted, the guy pulled a gun out on the the forest rangers or the FBI or whatever, and they shot him.
Did he? I thought he put his hands up. I seen the video, and it didn't look like he had a gun.
Well,
I didn't see an angle that showed that.
You know, the video I saw was from 500 feet away, so maybe he didn't
have
it.
There's one from within the truck where you can see him putting his hands up. And,
oh, okay.
You know, it's.
So
yeah, of course the main one you'll see, right? But yeah, we definitely are getting. I mean, I would ultimately argue that if you can break it down into 8 regions, then why not break it down into 50 states? And if you can break it down into 50 states having sovereignty, why don't you break it down into each town of, let's say, 1,000 to 10,000 people having sovereignty? And if you're going to break it down to that, I would argue as an anarchist and an individualist, why does some group have the right to my sovereignty? Why does some group have the right to tell me as an individual what's best for me? And that was the reason I gave on the last podcast I did when someone asked me why I don't vote. I said, well, because I only know what's best for me. I don't know what's best for the people. And certainly I would think that other people don't know what's best for me. You know, but I guess, you know, the reason you asked me to come on was to talk about the other options besides Hillary and Trump, right?
Yeah.
So you've got your Gary Johnson and the Libertarian Party, but that's like, as they have the term rhino Republican in name only. I argue that the Libertarian Party not only is an oxymoron, but they're libertarian in name only. You know, they want to fix the state apparatus through the state. They want to reduce the amount of state, but that is, you know, that's a fool's errand. When you there's never in the history of the world been an example of a government that actually willfully gave up power. You know?
Yeah, that's
just like they don't gain the power from the will of the people either. They gain it by force and by conquering, and vice versa. They do not give it up except for by force.
Yeah, that's asking like Nike to be like, you know what, we're only going to charge $90 now instead of $130. Just
right.
We're going to.
Oh, instead of stealing 40% of your labor through income tax, we'll only steal 20%. Well, you're still stealing 20% of my labor. You know, if 100% of my labor going to someone else's slavery, I'd argue that any percentage is, unless I'm voluntarily giving it up, and that's the broader point I'll get to. But with Gary Johnson, he's got a scumbag vice president named Bill Weld who just came out openly vouching for Hillary Clinton. Just an absolute spit in the face to everyone who's worked on their campaign trying to, you know, say we're not the establishment,
distance,
we're not those guys.
Yeah.
And Bill Weld comes out on some show where the woman on whatever CNN or MSNBC is literally spoon feeding him this opportunity to just vouch for Hillary. And then people, you still have delusional people in the Libertarian Party. Well, he's not endorsing her; he vouched for her. It's like, okay, when you're done with your verbal gymnastics, let me know, and your semantic games, you know, I'll start paying attention to you again. But you know, I said I was a Libertarian. That's because in 2012, I actually did vote. I voted for Ron Paul.
Oh my God, you wouldn't shut the fuck up. You wouldn't shut up about Ron Paul. I mean,
I wouldn't.
Mad props to you.
But I'll tell you why that's different, and I'm not a hypocrite in a second. But Ron Paul actually said, out of this year's candidates, the most anti-war, right, which is the issue I said was the most important to me, the most anti-war candidate, Ron Paul said, was Jill Stein of the Green Party. And I'd agree with that. She's actually anti-war as opposed to non-interventionalist, or you know, trying to reduce the size of the military. She's just like, let's get the F out of all these messes we've made, and let's start apologizing to these people we've attacked for no reason. You know, Iraq, over 500,000 civilians by the most conservative counts are dead. in a country that had nothing to do with 9/11. You know, we went in 2 years after 9/11 happened, and then later found out the reasons and the pretext for which were completely fabricated. You know, the anthrax letters, the weapons of mass destruction, the chemical labs that didn't exist. You know,
what's up with this like $500 million contract for these fake ISIS videos? What the fuck was that all about?
Oh yeah, did you know? Wow, that's amazing. You know about that? Not thinking you wouldn't know about that. Like you, I just recently found out about that. There's no coverage of that on the news.
Yeah,
there's
like come no on. Coverage. Like are you kidding? Like that was like the
Oh yeah, green screens, everything. $500,000 to a United Kingdom Bill, British
Bill,
PR company
with a B billion. $450 million. Listeners, yep. look it up if you haven't.
And that's more money than the New Jersey public school system runs off of. You know, so if you you extrapolate it out, I mean, and that's what it comes down to.
We paid for that. I mean, that's.
That's taxes. That's stolen from you to be paid for. They're stealing money from you to pay for the things that scare you into thinking you need them, and therefore they can legitimize stealing money from you. That is the name of the game. It's divide and conquer. It's scare tactics. It's making you think, wow, if I don't pay these guys, someone's going to kill me. If I don't pay these guys, someone's going to rob. If I don't let these guys rob me, someone might rob me. You know, and it's just. It's a ridiculous, whatever
your tax bracket is, if it's 50%, I know a couple comedian friends of mine that were legitimately screwed because they had really good years and they were like, man, I made like $30,000 too much. And now I've got to hide $150,000 or else it's going to get taxed right out of my, you know, my paycheck because I'm in that upper tax bracket now, even though only by $30,000. So if he would have made $30,000 less, it would have saved him $80,000.
Right. Even if the year before they were eating ramen, you know, and fueled by ramen to make the comedy that they made, you know, and the anguish that inspired that comedic outlook, you know, right?
Oh, it's just like, come on, man. I feel like success in my opinion, I get tired of the right saying like, oh, everyone's on welfare and they're milking the system and why am I paying for someone's cigarettes and all that kind of stuff. And it pisses me off when I go into 7-Eleven and I see people buying like Monster energy drinks with EBT cards.
Right, with EBT,
You know, it's just kind of like you wrote off 7 trucks last year for your business that Uncle Sam paid for 7 of your trucks just because you have a good tax guy. And like, how is that? Right. How's that not the same thing?
There's different types. There's Republican welfare whores that do that, and there's the Democratic welfare whores that just take money and from other people and spend it. I'd argue that, you know, there wouldn't even be a problem spending like welfare is a whole other issue, like you said. But there wouldn't be an issue with people being poor and not being able to afford food to eat and all that if the government wasn't taxing literally every level of existence. And that's what it comes down to. They steal no matter what. Everything that the government creates, they've stolen from someone else. And that's actually what I was getting at with why it wasn't hypocritical to say, you know, I voted for Ron Paul in 2012. His entire campaign was about the message of individual freedom and the priority of the individual over the group and over the so-called, you know, societal needs. You know, that whole idea of society is a game. You know, again, it's like ISIS. It's a boogeyman. It's, oh, no, this is what society wants. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure it's just what you, the group of people who are stealing from you, want. You know, it has nothing to do with my desires. I don't want to get paid for something else.
It always comes down to who gave the most, what pharmaceutical company gave the most money. You know what I mean? You know, and it's just...
Or whichever corporate interest. And corporations are a function of the state. Without the government, there'd be no competition barriers, so anybody could compete with these companies, and there wouldn't be monopolies. Natural monopolies don't form. They only, if you think about it, every monopoly that's ever existed was a government-approved business. They had the stamp of approval. They had the government's business license. They were allowed to do what they did until they got too big. The reason they got too big is because the government was not giving a license to what could be its competition. And that's what my belief, after being a Ron Paul, advocate in 2012, I did a lot more research, and I found the Mises Institute. And that's, the Mises Institute is an advocacy think tank for free market principles, for the idea that if government got the hell out of everyone's business, the market, which, you know, kind of sounds like the society, but it's not. The market of people making business decisions would go with their best option, not what's forced on them. So in other words, instead of having to use an Apple iMac computer when I was in school, I could have picked what computer I wanted to use in my education program instead of every school in America having Apple, and now today Apple is one of the biggest computer companies that exists. You know, these monopolies form because government takes money from otherwise individuals that would otherwise choose what's best for them and says, everyone has to use this policy. Everyone has to do this, you know? At the end of the day, this is the joke I was going to make about sports. I saw a guy walking by in the airport with a shirt that said Rizzo Bryant 2016. And I was like, whoa, I'm about to do a podcast about alternative voting options. What state is Rizzo and Bryant from? And he goes, dude, Chicago, the Cubs. And I was like, oh, my God.
That's hilarious. But, I love it.
Oh, yeah, it was perfect. I knew it was a symbol. As soon as I saw it, I was like, this is going to be a great podcast with John. I know it. If that just happened. But here's the thing, John, and do not say this lightly. Putting your faith in a Rizzo Bryant ticket, putting your faith in sports heroes, is going to do infinitely more to better your life than putting your faith in political heroes. Because at least the team might win, and you might get what you want, which is a successful team. With a political grouping, you'll literally never, you put your faith in politicians, you'll always be let down. I mean, that's even true of me with the Ron Paul campaign. I haven't heard him talking about, taking apart different departments of the government, you know, reducing the size and scope of government. And after thinking about it years later, he couldn't have done that as president in 4 years.
Not
even 8 years. He couldn't have done that. You cannot fix government through government, which is what separates Bernie Sanders from Ron Paul. Bernie Sanders is this year's, Ron Paul, so people say. Well, because he was talking a lot about the social issues that Ron Paul was talking about individual rights from a social standpoint. The problem being is Bernie's solution was, I'm going to take away individual rights in the marketplace and force more government on people. Again, I don't believe that you can fix cancer with more cancer.
Yeah.
I don't believe that you can fix the parasitical class of humans by being more parasitical. You know, there's a ruling class, and giving the ruling class more power is not going to make them stop using their power. That's just not how it works, you know. It's a nice thought, the socialist communist paradigm, but it's a complete farce, you know. It's a trick peddled by cultural Marxists to convince people that, you know, if we just all get along, we'll all stop stealing from each other. Well, how about you just stop stealing from each other? No, we just need to steal a little more from you, and then we'll stop. No, just stop stealing.
And listeners, you can always find Peter on Twitter, P-A-K-A-L-L-M-A-N-P-A Kalman. P-A-K-A-L-L-M-A-N.
And make sure you check out the Mises Institute, MISES.org. I mean, a lot of these ideas I'm expounding on are, you know, a lot of people are going to have a visceral reaction to this show. You know, well, without government, how are we going to have the military or the roads or the police? Or, well, you know, we're not. We're not going to have police. We're not going to have military. But if you go to Mises.org, MISES.org, and you search in the search bar for military without the state, law without the state, justice without the state, roads without the state, that's what's amazing about the Mises Institute, the collection of thousands and thousands of writings that kind of explain that, you know.
And that was MISE.org?
MISES.org.
MISES.org, Mises Institute.
Yeah, throw a link to it in your description of the video or whatever.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
At the end of the day, we are going to see a society where people don't steal from one another. And there's not a group of people that are exempt from morality. And that's what it comes down to. You know, I believe stealing is wrong no matter who's doing it. I believe that violence, the initiation of violence, is wrong no matter who's doing it. And putting on a badge and a uniform and saying, oh, a lot of people said I could do this. You know, if you don't have a right to do something, you can't transfer that right to someone else. And that is why I don't believe the government has the right to do it. And thank you, John, so much for having me on, dude. I really appreciate it.
No, real quick. And two, I just wanted to talk about the tipping, man. You wrote a really good article online.
Oh, the tipping article? Thank you. You read that. Awesome.
Oh, man.
Thank
not
you
only
so
did
much.
I, not only did I read, I read it, but then I also preached that to several people. And so many people have worked in the service industry and have
that's
dealt.
That's why I wanted to write it, because I think 1 in 3 people have worked in the industry, especially in LA, it's probably 1 in 2. And it's a relatable topic, you know.
And so, just real quick, just if you wouldn't mind,
I can give you the 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Basically, the idea is that you should always tip in cash. And the reason you should always tip in cash, and this is a little speech I give to waitresses or waiters when I do it, is I'm tipping you in cash because you did all the work. you and your team here, you know, are the ones responsible for providing me with the service and the product, which is this amazing meal I just ate. That makes me, I don't want you to give this to anyone who didn't help you. So, of course, split it off with your busboy, split it off with your bartender. So, do what your company policy is, but don't give it to the people who already made my meal 9% more expensive than you.
Right, right.
Don't give this money to people. And that's a lowball estimate, Don. 9% is the sales tax. If you consider the tax on the employees, the tax on the property, the tax on the product of the food that had to be brought in from the farm, and then you go up the level, right? The driver who drove it, the taxation on that guy's truck, the taxation on the factory that produced the food, the taxation on the farm that grew the food, and you keep going. There's so many levels. That's what I was saying before. We wouldn't have a problem with affording things if the government wasn't taxing things on 9 different levels. And what it comes down to is, if you do this, if you tip in cash, those people are getting to keep the entire value of their labor. Everything that they've worked for, they get to keep instead of someone stealing 30%.
And that's so much more money to go around. And I mean, there's...
Exactly. That's exactly the point. People get to choose how to spend their money, and it gets put back into the economy instead of wasted by some bureaucrat. I mean, you said something about people buying a bunch of trucks on Uncle Sam. Look at all the cops that have these huge trucks and all these cars, and they get paid 4 or 5 times as much. My buddy Rob Fellner writes these reports at the organization Transparent California. It's a great website. It tells you the salaries of every person in the public sphere of California. He also does it in Nevada. And his stories are getting picked up like crazy because there's a DWP janitor in San Francisco who made $280,000 last year. $280,000 to pick up trash on the BART. And you've been on the BART, John. There's trash everywhere. There's a garbage hot.
You're doing a really bad job for $280,000.
Right? Yeah, dude. And the reason why is because he's working all these outrageous overtime hours. And, look at our old, he's working overtime. It's like, yeah, but he's not doing good work. He's working overtime. They could be someone else working normal time and making a normal salary for a janitor. And the reality is $20,000 a year is the average janitor take in America. And that's pre-tax, and that's no benefits. These BART employees get lifetime, health insurance and all this other crap, and pensions. Don't even get me started on pensions. But, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is there's a group of people, the majority of people, who produce. Maybe a lot of people are on welfare, but there's people out there producing. And those people get taken from by this group of people who produces nothing and steals everything. And that's government. Government steals everything that it has. And so my way of civil disobedience is giving it a tip in cash. Because at the end of the day, like you said, plenty of people work in restaurants. I, like you said, I'm on the road all the time. I eat out probably 2/3 of my meal, maybe 3/4 of my meal. And, it's my way of getting my message across, but also just helping the people, helping the people who are working their asses off to not have to get stolen from for one meal of their life.
That little bit of extra, goes a long way. It really does, especially when you're only making, 25, 30 grand a year, if that.
And you know what, man? They tell me that. They say, wow, most of them say, I never claim my cash tip. Thank you so much. I'm glad you actually know that about us because we get hosed. Especially in states that don't have minimum wage like California, where they're getting $2 an hour, and then if they don't get tipped, if they get all credit card tips, they're getting 30-40% of that stolen. It's unfair, man. Some people who make that $2 an hour don't get anything from their hourly wage because it's all going towards tax. And if you're working for 30-40% tax rate, that means until April of every year, until you get your tax return from the money they stole from you the previous year, you're working for someone else. Because the first 3-4 months of your life, of your year every year, is being stolen, and you're a slave. You're a slave for the first 3-4 months, and that's taxation is slavery. People say, "Oh, taxation is theft." Has been this meme that's going around. It's not just theft; it is theft, but it's actually it's chattel slavery.
So, dude, I feel so I feel so bad right now because you're on the East Coast time. I'm getting you all worked up. It's like midnight. You're not gonna be able to fall asleep.
Yeah, I'm always worked up, John. I'm always worked up. Don't worry, it's all good.
Listeners, again, follow Peter on Twitter. PA Kalman, KALLMAN. That's PA Kalman, KALLMAN. And the Mises.
Yeah, follow the Mises Institute.
MISES.org. That's right. That's right. Yep. And then
their Twitter is MISES.
At MISES. And then also Transparent California in Nevada. That sounds like some pretty interesting websites to dig up some.
Oh, they're great, dude. Yeah, my buddy Rob Fellner does them. He's blown up right now. He got picked up by NBC, ABC, especially over that BART janitor thing. He's blown up right now, so it's great. And that's the thing that I want to say, man. There's thousands of people with these ideas, and who, there's actually millions of people, because I'm getting text messages every day from people like you who are, yo, man, I really like what you're saying in that thing. I get what you're saying. I just don't talk about it like you do. And that's what it comes down to, man. Everyone knows what's going on. Everyone knows that this is a joke and that we're getting fucked with, and it's coming to an end. And honestly, the way me and my friends joke around, you know, they're finished. There's enough information out there, and there's enough people putting out the message that, you know, there is no exemption from morality, that sooner or later, these people who have no morals are going to be, you know, removed. You know, they're going to be removed from power. They're going to be removed from their ability. What it is a perceived legitimacy that is going to be removed. And that is when people will truly live free in this country.
Well, and again, you put up great stuff all the time on Twitter. And I would just, listeners, I would just follow them, even if you don't agree. I mean, just expand your thoughts and your mind every once in a while, and it's not going to kill you. And then maybe you grasp, maybe you think about some things slightly differently in the years to come. But
and you know what, John? You know what the best part about anarchism is? Is that it's about individuality. So no one has to agree with me. As long as they don't force what they want onto me, I won't force what I want onto anybody, ever. And that's what's great about it. Is no one has to agree. They just have to agree to not use violence against me. And that's a pretty fair thing to agree to.
Yeah. I won't throw a stone if you don't throw a stone. Sounds in a perfect world. But, well, hey, man, thanks again for your time. And, you know, it's going to be
my pleasure, John. We got to hang out when I'm back in L.A.
Yep. Yeah, when you get back to L.A., you got my number. By all means, please give me a call.
Yeah, man, I'll shoot you info about my birthday. It's at the end of November. I'm going to be back for it, so we'll definitely have it. And there'll be a lot of familiar faces there.
Oh, I can't wait, man. I'm there. You be good, right? We'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
Peace.
I saw General Lee raise a saber in his hand. Heard the cannons roar as you made your last stand. You marched into battle with the gray and the red. When the cannon smoke cleared, took days to count the dead. Cause you fought all the way, Johnny Reb, Johnny Reb. You fought all the way, Johnny Reb.
Thank you, Peter, man. Look, and again, nothing to do with sports, kind of everything to do with the election. And that's just... Look, most of you are voting. I haven't registered. I don't care for either. That's just how it goes for me right now. So, I'm kind of in that boat with Peter. But man, I hope you enjoyed it. And like I said, it had nothing to do with a ball full of air or a puck or a tennis or a baseball or tightly wound cork. It had nothing to do with any of that, and everything to do with. Just, you know, where we are right now as a country and, you know, where we're headed and some possible things to curb, you know, that direction, maybe towards a better course, I guess is the best way to put that. And real quick, before we get ahead of ourselves with the sponsors, please go to onelovely.com or unionpresskc.com. Right now they're running a special where you can get 20 shirts and I believe 12 hoodies for like 360. I think it's a really good deal, especially if you got a basketball team or a family reunion, or a small business or a big business. I don't care. Or do two orders, but they're really good. They've printed shirts for me all the time. And if you go to onelovely.com, they've got a bunch of actually really cool, just original stuff, and that you're not going to find anywhere else. And own a bunch of that stuff too. And then if you're gonna be in La Jolla, California, San Diego, Pacific Beach, anywhere around there, really just anywhere in that area, because they've got Uber Eats now and they deliver anywhere. But by all means, go to Don Carlos Tacos. It's amazing. I recommend the Trevino. It's half asada, half chorizo. Got fries in there, guacamole. It's an amazing burrito. Your stomach will explode, but it is worth it. And he's on Twitter at Eat a Burrito, and that's on Pearl Street. Right, it's like two blocks down from the La Jolla Comedy Store, so you can't miss it. So if you're in that area, by all means, check that out. But I wanted to get back to the Cubs victory speech and all that. And then, so, all right, hold on. Let me get this queued up here. I think I got it right. There we go.
It happened, baby. It happened.
The excitement. First of all, having been at the Kansas City Victory Parade last year, and that whole experience of just being in a mob of in Kansas City, they estimated 800,000, which seems about right. Just block after block after block after block of 20, 30,000 people just everywhere. There's actually videos I posted up on our Facebook page from last year of videos from the parade. And it just gives you a nice quick glimpse. I zoom in down like 10 city blocks and all you see is just rows and rows, 30, 40 people deep. Just stretching for a mile, and then to from that point on to run to the rally point where they're giving the speeches was incredible. What we got, ambulance driving by? Perfect. But so that it was just incredible. So what you're hearing now is the speeches from like the rally point after and watching the parade a little bit. I think they kind of shorted the Cubs fans. They were all on big tour buses and they just kind of zipped through real quick. Whereas in Kansas City, each player had their own truck. It was really slow. Everybody saw each player like right up close. It was more personal than the Chicago one where they just kind of shuffled everybody through, which I get. They don't want to turn it into an 8-hour thing. But anyway, here we go.
Real quick, it's a lot of people that obviously are on this stage, but there's a lot of people that aren't from top to bottom, from the Dominican Republic to Tom Ricketts. Everyone in between, all the minor league coaches that have put in the work for this that aren't getting recognized. We thank them. We thank our entire organization, our medical staff, everyone. Two guys I want to single out real quick is VJ, our traveling secretary, is the absolute man. He's the reason why we can do anything is possible through him. And another guy that I don't think is up here is our strength coach, Tim Buss. He keeps us going every day. It's such a grind, and Tim Buss is every single day coming in and getting us going. And as you can see, these guys mean so much to this team that really no one knows about. And all the scouting people, all the directors, thank you. But these two guys mean so much to our team, and they don't get credit. And what better way to do it in front of 5 million people. So real quick, for every, I feel like I was here during the bad times, and I got so much into the culture of the Chicago Cubs that every single person that has worn this jersey, I feel like won the World Series with us today or the other day. Dempster, Kerry Wood, Ernie Banks, who is looking down, smiling so bright right now. Billy Williams, Ronnie Sano. It's just every single player that's still living too has been a big reason we're here and a big part of this, and we thank them. And the last guy, well, two more.
Let's not forget Buck O'Neill. Buck O'Neill.
The wives, the girlfriend.
Legendary Kansas City Monarch player was actually the first African-American coach in the big leagues for the Cubs. Don't forget him. He wore that jersey too.
All the parents that are here, the sacrifice that they make for us all the time is unbelievable. Our schedules are so demanding. And
This is Rizzo, by the way.
Without them supporting us, we're not standing here. Lastly, before I introduce him, I want to say a few words about him. The grandpa. Gramps and I sat down a few years ago in an offseason before his last year at Boston. He was a free agent. And we just talked. And we have the same.
Okay, real quick, before we get into Grandpa, do you guys remember what was with the dick bumping? After that the home run celebration? I don't know if you remember that, but I found this this video, like, kind of highlight from the dick bumping that I'm going to got here just. This is great.
Now, here's a what the fuck. Okay, sorry for the cussing, but this really is. This is really irritating. Okay, he comes in. I'm going to pause it here.
This is David Ross after he hit his home run.
Now, you know, everybody's gotten into this whole fist bump thing. You know, you go like, fist bump. Yeah, do the fist bump. It's really cool. That's like the end thing. Well, how about a dick bump? Huh? Who dicks bump? Dick bumps. Who does that? Watch this. Are you kidding me? What kind of what is that? What is that? You think it's once? Here we go. Yeah, let's just bump our dicks together. Is that the new trend? Is that what we're doing now? Here we go. Here's a good one. Here we go. Boom. Boom, yeah, hop that dick. There you go. Bump dicks. Yeah, it's awesome. Let's rewind that. See, people wonder, no, that's not a dick bump. No way, that's silly. Yeah, look at each other's penises. There you go, let's just rub them. There we go. This is in the Major League Baseball. Okay, here we go, right here. Right here, he's pointing at it. Pointing at it. Rub the penises. There we go.
And he was. Yeah, he's real definitely nice. He's definitely pointing right at it. He's like, yep. Rub my dick. Rub
there
your dick.
Go. There they
right
go.
Here.
They're jumping on each other. There you go. A little high jump. There we go. Do it. There we go. Oh, yeah. Wow. That's really mature for baseball. That's awesome. Yep. Gotta love baseball. Yeah. Cubs. Showing the new trend. Can't wait to see everybody start dick bumping. Really fucking mature.
This guy, I mean, it didn't piss me off quite that much, but it did. I looked up at my wife. I was like, did they just all touch dicks right there? And because we didn't want to spend $300 a month, we don't have DVR, I can't rewind it. And I'm pretty sure I just saw everyone, you know, slamming their dicks against each other after that celebratory home run. So that was Grandpa. That was David Ross, as they say. And then here's his beloved speech to the team. Here's his send-off words.
We're talking, and I say to my agent, I go, man, this is exactly what the Chicago Cubs need. He is exactly what we need.
We need more. That was Rizzo saying he met Rossi like 4 years, 3 years ago, and was like, we love this guy. This is who we need on our team. And we need more dick bumping.
To bring everything together. And obviously a lot of pieces came through with that, but he taught myself personally how to become a real winner. And woo, he's like a brother to me. He's taught me how to be. He's taught me a lot in life, on the field, off the field, how to be a better person. I'm forever grateful for him. And he's going out a champion forever. For the rest of his life, he could say the last game he played in, he's a world champion. Let's bring up David Ross.
First of all, could you seriously end a career any better way than... just unbelievable. Hollywood script for sure. Ross is definitely going to go on to coach and just be a legendary, the next, you know, Tino Francona or Madden or whatever, or Matheny, Mike Matheny in St. Louis. He kind of fits in that category, but, or Dave Roberts in LA. But anyway, here's Grandpa Ross. Not Johnny Gomes. Sounds like Johnny Gomes. Not Johnny Gomes.
I owe a lot to these guys. I'm going to be quick. I want to thank my family, my wife, Hyla, my kids, Landry Cole, Harper, my mom and dad, and this group right behind me. Thank you, guys. Wait. How about a quick selfie?
And then he proceeds to take a selfie with everyone for the next couple minutes. But just again, congratulations, Cubs fans. Congratulations, baseball on all levels. Because I'll tell you this right now, in about starting in 8 to 10 years, you're going to see a lot of professional baseball players coming out of Kansas City and Chicago. Because as the teams go, the players go. I know Little League. Sign-ups in and around the Kansas City and Missouri area were up like 30-40% in the last 2 years because of what the Royals have been doing. So I'm sure, I mean, look, Keanu Reeves was already there 10 years ago laying all the foundation for a very successful youth baseball program in and around Chicago. So Chicago, I'm just saying the pressure's on you. I want to see a lot of stars coming out of your city, and I'll give you 12 years. You figure kids that are 5 now, they'll be 17, ready to be drafted. Just in love with the Cubs, playing baseball all the time. It's great for the sport. Sorry, Cleveland, you guys are like the martyr for baseball. You took one for the team, and I'll support you for that. I mean, look, America is happy right now, and unfortunately, it was at your expense. There's a lot that goes into that. I call it the StubHub effect. You guys essentially played. It wasn't even neutral. It was more like a home game. for the Cubs. I mean, it really, and the proof was after the Cubs had won and everyone's standing around. You're like, oh, there's still 40,000 Cubs fans in a stadium that only held 38,000. It was shocking a little bit, but you could tell immediately, you know, every home run, the place would just erupt, and it was odd and confusing. But what a great game, though, just to bookend an amazing baseball season. In my personal baseball experiences this year, this was the best season, starting with last year, with the Royals finally winning the World Series after 29 years, going to spring training, going to several Royals games, having a great time there. Games in Anaheim, several games in San Diego, playoff game, NLDS in LA for the Dodgers against the Nationals, Royals Mariners games, Stockton Ports minor league game, the High A California League All-Star game against the Carolina League at Lake Elsinore. And then now this World Series, All-Star Game weekend in San Diego, the Futures game, the Home Run Derby, which was incredible. Giancarlo Stanton just blasting balls out of the stadium. Kind of tragic. You know, you had the Fernandez boat incident there at the end of the season, which just a good reminder. Don't be a dumb shit. Don't get in a boat and get drunk and do a bunch of coke and die. Just because your start got pushed back, or just no excuse really to go out and do that in a boat. And I'm not saying like young and stupid, everyone's a moron for the most part when they're 23, 24 years old. But that's just really, really dumb, especially on a boat at night. And I know people in Miami, I'm assuming that's just like getting on a golf cart in Scottsdale and just driving down the street to the liquor store. It's just people know how to operate boats, but It's just a tragic, every time Chapman would get on the mound and you see that JF-16 on his hat and you're just like, God damn. And then those toxicology reports came back and you're like, coke? Okay, yeah. Okay, all right, God damn. You know, and the thing is, like, clearly the testing system is a little bit loose. And unfortunately, there's no way in hell the players' union would ever, you know, they've already agreed to all the steroid stuff. I don't know. I don't get it, but it's tragic. But aside from that, it was an incredible baseball season. And like we did last year, and like we will continue to do every year when the baseball season ends, on the major league level, I might, yeah, go to Arizona for some fall league games just because it's fun and cheap. It's only a 5-hour drive and you can see like 3 games in 2 days. So, I mean, the season, I guess, never ends for us true baseball fans. But, guys, really quick, thanks again. Spreading the word. We had, like I mentioned last week, we had 6,000 listeners last month, which is awesome. And I love it. And thank you. Couldn't have done it without you. And let's see. Oh, yeah. Follow us, Sportsaholics, at Twitter. Remember, you can hit up Peter at P.A. Kalman. That's P-A-K-A-L-L-M-A-N. Follow him. Great guy, funny guy. Always got good stuff to read. But I will leave you guys with this. This is a great poem, The Green Fields of the Mind, by Bart Giamani, the former commissioner of baseball. And, it's the official close for everybody. You know, like, that goes for Cubs fans, too. There's no Cubs game tomorrow. You know, baseball's done. And this kind of encapsulates everything that I enjoy about baseball. It's the warm summer. It's just the theme of summer and everything that goes on there, and the long days and the warm days and the rain and everything else. And then in the hopes that your team's still playing in October. But anyway, I'm going to stop talking. You guys stay obsessed. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week.
On the grounds that it was completely irrelevant to the purpose of the class notes, I accepted the judgment cheerfully. And then, when unaccountably 2 months later I became president, the Alumni Magazine reprinted it. Remarkable. But not as class notes. It breaks your heart. It is designed to break your heart. The game begins in the spring when everything else begins again, and it blossoms in the summer, filling the afternoons and evenings. And then as soon as the chill rains come, it stops and leaves you to face the fall alone. You count on it, rely on it to buffer the passage of time, to keep the memory of sunshine and high skies alive, and then just when the days are all twilight, when you need it most, it stops. Today, October 2nd, a Sunday of rain and broken branches and leaf-clogged drains and slick streets, it stopped, and summer was gone. Somehow the summer seemed to slip by faster this time. Maybe it wasn't this summer, but all the summers that in this, my 40th summer, slip by so fast. There comes a time when every summer will have something of autumn in it. Whatever the reason, it seemed to me that I was investing more and more in baseball, making the game do more of the work that keeps time fat and slow and lazy. I was counting on the game's deep patterns, three strikes, three outs, three times, three innings, and its deepest impulse to go out and back, to leave and to return home, to set the order of the day and to organize the daylight. I wrote a few things this summer that did not last, nothing grand, but some things, and yet that work was just camouflage. The real activity was done with the radio, not the all-seeing, all-falsifying television. And was the playing of the game in the only place it will last, the enclosed green field of the mind. There in that warm, bright place, what the old poet called mutability, does not so quickly come. But out here, on Sunday, October 2nd, when it rains all day, Dame Mutability never loses. She was in the crowd at Fenway yesterday, a great day full of bluster and contradiction. When the Red Sox came up in the last of the ninth, trailing Baltimore 8-5, well, the Yankees, rain delayed against Detroit, needing only to win one or have Boston lose one to win it all, sat in New York washing down cold cuts with beer and watching the Boston game. Boston had won two, the Yankees had lost two, and suddenly it seemed as if the whole season might go to the last day or beyond, except here was Boston losing 8-5, while New York sat in its family room and put up its feet. Lynn, both ankles hurting now as they had in July, hits a single down the right field line. The crowd stirs. It's on its feet. Hobson, third baseman, former Bear Bryant quarterback, strong, quiet, over 100 RBIs, goes for three breaking balls and is out. The goddess smiles and encourages her agent, a canny journeyman named Nelson Bryles. Now comes a pinch hitter, Bernie Carbo, one-time Rookie of the Year, erratic, quick, a shade too handsome, so laid back he's always in his soul, stretched out in the tall grass, one arm under his head, watching the clouds and laughing. Now he looks over some low stuff, unworthy of him, and then, uncoiling, sends one out. Straight on a rising line, over the center field wall, no cheap Fenway shot, but all of it, the physics as elegant as the arc the ball describes. New England is on its feet, roaring. The summer will not pass. Roaring, they recall the evening late and cold in 1975, the sixth game of the World Series, perhaps the greatest baseball game played in the last 50 years, when Carbo, loose and easy, had uncoiled to tie the game that Fisk would win. It is now 8-7, one out, and school will never start, rain will never come, sun will warm the back of your neck forever. Now Bailey, picked up from the National League recently, big arms, heavy gut, experience, new to the league and the club, fouls off too, and then checking, tentative, a big man off balance, he pops a soft liner to the first baseman. It is suddenly darker and later. And the announcer doing the game coast to coast, the New Yorker who works for a New York television station, sounds relieved. His little world, well lit, hot combed, split second timed, has no capacity to absorb this much gritty, grainy, contrary reality. Cox swings a bat, stretches his long arm, bends his back. The rookie from Pawtucket who broke in 2 weeks ago with a record six straight hits, a kid drafted ahead of Freddie Lynn, rangy, smooth, cool. The count runs 2-2, and Cox swings, and the ball beginning toward the mound, and then, in a jaunty, wayward dance, skips past Bryles, fainting to the right, skimming the last of the grass, finding the dirt, moving now like some small, purposeful marine creature negotiating the green deep, easily avoiding the jagged rock of second base and traveling steady and straight now out into the dark, silent recesses of center field. Well, the aisles are jammed, the place is on its feet, the wrappers, the program, the Coke cups and peanut shells, the detritus of an afternoon, the anxieties, the things that have to be done tomorrow, the regrets about yesterday, the accumulation of a summer, all forgotten, while hope, the anchor, bites and takes hold, where a moment before it had seemed we would be swept out with the tide, Rice is up. Rice, who Aaron had said was the only one he'd seen with the ability to break his records, Rice, the best clutch hitter on the club with the best slugging percentage in the league, Rice, so quick and strong, he once checked his swing halfway through and snapped the bat in two. Rice, the hammer of God, sent to scourge the Yankees. The sound was overwhelming. Fathers pounded their sons on the back. Cars pulled off the road. Households froze. New England exulted in its blessedness and roared its thanks for all good things for Rice and for a summer stretching halfway through October. Bryles threw, Rice swung, and it was over. One pitch, fly to center, and it stopped. Summer died in New England, and like rain sliding off a roof, the crowd slipped out of Fenway quickly, with only a steady murmur of concern for the drive ahead remaining of the roar. Dame mutability had turned the seasons and translated hope to memory once again. And once again, she had used baseball, our best invention to stay change, to bring change on. That is why it breaks my heart, that game. Not because in New York they could win because Boston lost, and that, there's a rough justice and a reminder to the Yankees of how slight and fragile are the circumstances that exalt one group of human beings over another. It breaks my heart because it was meant to. Because it was meant to foster in me again the illusion that there was something abiding, some pattern and some impulse that could come together to make a reality that would resist the corrosion. And because after it had fostered again that most hungered for illusion, the game was meant to stop and betray precisely what it promised. Now, of course, there are those who learn after the first few times. They grow out of sports. And there are others who are born with the wisdom to know that nothing lasts. These are the truly tough among us, the ones who can live without illusion or without even the hope of illusion. But I am not that grown up or up to date. I am a simpler creature, tied to more primitive patterns and cycles. I need to think something lasts forever. And it might as well be that state of being that is a game. It might as well be that in a green field in the sun. Thank you.